Welcome to Navigating Cancer Together. My name is Talaya Dindi. I'm a cancer thriver, cancer doula, independent patient advocate, and owner of On the Other Side. I use my experience to help others get on the other side of cancer. Gaps between the guidance, emotional support, and education that are needed and what one receives can be huge. This podcast fills those gaps by sharing stories, resources, and information about all things related to cancer and wellness. I interview guests from all walks of life who are living with cancer, caregivers, and those who are thriving on the other side. Also, I talk with organizations, healthcare professionals, and experts in the health and wellness spaces who offer complementary and integrative care. Join me. We are in this together. Hello, everyone. This is Talaya Dindi from OnTheOtherSide.life, and you're listening to Navigating Cancer Together, the show that has something for everyone facing cancer. Why? Because everyone is different. We're different needs, beliefs, and perspectives. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. I encourage you to open your minds and your hearts. Today, our very special guest is Michelle Hutchings Medina. Have you ever wondered how you would navigate through the unimaginable? Maybe you're currently grappling with the aftermath of tragedy and finding it challenging to navigate through. Today, our guest embodies resilience in the face of adversity on multiple fronts. As a former oncology professional turned keynote speaker and certified professional coach, she brings a unique blend of expertise to her mission. That mission is to assist others in not only surviving, but also thriving in the aftermath of the unimaginable. Join me in welcoming my very special guest, our very special guest, Michelle Hutchings Medina. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today and welcome.
Thank you, Talaya. I am so excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me to this program.
Absolutely. It is my absolute honor and pleasure, Michelle. So Michelle, as I just shared, you've been through a lot in life. You've had to navigate through a lot of tough times and changes over the past few years. Unfortunately, you had triple negative breast cancer diagnosis. That was one of the things that you had to experience. Please share with the audience how you learned that you had breast cancer and what was your first course of action.
Sure. So just a little background into how I got there. I've been a cancer professional all my career. I started out as a radiation therapist. So I actually used to treat cancer patients with radiation. That was a very beautiful and rewarding experience. And then I moved on into the vendor side where I did training as well as sales of oncology equipment. So I've kind of been in the industry for over 30 years. And the part of my life where things got really, really difficult for me began in May of 2018, where I lost my husband of over 25 years to suicide. We, in fact, met at an industry conference. He was also a radiation therapist and was in oncology as well and had moved on after many years to be in hospital administration. But unfortunately, he took his life in May of 2018. And as you can imagine, that was a very difficult time of my life. The despair, the anguish was quite devastating. And maybe about a year and a half later, just when I was seeing maybe a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, I was definitely still grieving, but seeing a little bit of light, I rolled over in my bed one night and I couldn't sleep. It was about 2:42 a.m. in December of 2019. I was about to go off and accept an award for work where I had sold the most of my product. And I couldn't sleep because I had a really early flight and I just rolled over in my bed. And I'm not quite sure what prompted me to touch my right breast. I was laying on my side and kind of half grabbing myself, like hugging myself. But my left hand reached across and I touched my right breast and I felt something. I said, no, no. And I touched again. I readjusted myself. I sat up in bed because I could not believe what I was feeling. And what I felt was a very massive lump. And because of the time that I had been in the industry, I kind of knew what was going on, but I couldn't believe that this was happening just a year and a half after losing my husband. And yeah, 2 weeks later, through imaging and biopsy, I was confirmed that I had stage three triple negative breast cancer. I had some lymph nodes that were prominent, and at least one of them was positive. They couldn't get to all of them, but that was my official diagnosis.
That is a lot, and I'm sorry to hear about your husband, Michelle. Gosh, that had to be really tough to be someone who worked in oncology. And you said you kind of knew, you had an idea of what you were feeling because of your experience in oncology. Because you worked in that space, what were some of the thoughts that were going through your mind? What was the first course of action that you took?
Yeah, so the first course of action, actually, what I did was I went on and I went to the work assignment, which traveling for work, which I'm not sure that was the right thing to do, but I was in California. And so by the time I arrived there, I could not reach anyone via phone, right? And then once I did reach someone to schedule the mammogram, the following week was actually Thanksgiving. I'm sorry, this happened in November. I was officially diagnosed in December was when I got the diagnosis. So the following week was Thanksgiving. So I had to wait like 2 weeks before I could get an appointment. So once I got the appointment, the next course of action was to just get busy with what I needed to do in order to prepare myself for treatment. And because I had had exposure in the industry, it actually made it a lot easier for me because I understood the terminology. I understood what I was facing. Although I had worked in radiation, I'd never worked in chemo, but I understood what I was being told. I got a second opinion from other cancer professionals that I had worked with. I got a second opinion, and then I just got about the business of getting myself ready for treatment.
Thank you for sharing that, Michelle. And speaking of different terms and things like that, what are modifiable risk factors for breast cancer diagnosis and recurrences? What are some factors?
Yeah, so one of the things that happened to me as a result of this diagnosis, because I had been in working in industry. And sometimes in industry, you're not as close to the latest stats. You're not as close to those. And what I learned as I was going through treatment was that African American women, in fact, had a lower incidence of breast cancer, how overall breast cancer. However, they had a 40% higher mortality rate. So 40% higher chance of dying from the disease. And that, in fact, is what caused me to get myself more acclimated about how did I get here and what could I do to get treated and prevent a reoccurrence. So, on that vein, when I started looking at the risk factors, there are risk factors that we can control. Those would be the modifiable risk factors. And then there's also risk factors that are out of our control. For instance, the fact that I am a woman, the chances of getting breast cancer are higher in women than in men. Men do get breast cancer, though, as well, but that would be a non-modifiable risk factor. I can't change my sex. So the modifiable risk factors around breast cancer are the obesity, so weight gain, particularly excessive weight after menopause, alcohol intake, high alcohol intake, and also those risk factors that are hormone related that are modifiable, right? So I can decide things like whether I breastfeed my children. I can decide if, in fact, I have children. In my case, I did not have children. Therefore, I did not breastfeed. So, any risk factors that are hormone related that you actually do, in fact, have the ability to control would be considered another modifiable risk factor. And also, more physical activity, because less physical activity increases our chances of a cancer diagnosis.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that, Michelle. I know it's very helpful for the listeners out there to have a better understanding of what that means. Due to your extensive work in oncology and healthcare, how did your experience in those areas impact decisions you made along your cancer journey and ultimately in your life?
Sure. Talia, what was really important to me was to be informed because I knew that there was no way I was going to be able to manage this disease if I were not informed, right? So being informed about the latest treatments and the standard of care, also being able to reach out and ask for help around those things that I did not understand. So, things that I didn't understand, making sure that when I left appointments, that I was clear on what next steps were. And what I have found with my background, as well as my experiences with other individuals that have had not just a breast cancer diagnosis, but any cancer diagnosis, is that sometimes we can put our head in the sand as if it's going to go away or I don't understand, so I don't want to understand. I don't want to, I just want to shut it out. And that's something that I highly encourage others not to do. And that is why asking for help is so important.
That is critical. And I know sometimes our personalities can prevent us from wanting to ask for help. You know, we're usually the person who does it all. But yes, cancer, when you get that diagnosis, that is a time where you definitely have to ask for help. There's just so much to juggle and so much to learn.
Yes, but to that end, there are so many wonderful websites that are dedicated to patient education. There's so many YouTube videos and things like that. Now, we do have to be careful not to get our information from reputable sources, but I do believe that most people have the ability to find the source that they're going to understand and allow them to tap in. I think about how many times I go on YouTube to find information on anything. You know, it's a recipe, how to use my Yeti mic, how to deal with my cat. So we can utilize those same resources to help us learn about our disease as well.
Absolutely. Michelle, do you mind sharing some of those resources that you've used in the past?
Sure. I would definitely say that the Mayo Clinic, I find that their patient education web resources, the videos are very, very relatable. They're broken down in such a way, like bite-sized pieces of information, and the information is communicated in everyday language. So I would say that that's one of the websites for a very basic understanding, but also things like the NCI, National Cancer Institute, NIH, breast cancer awareness websites like Susan Komen, and lots and lots of resources out there dedicated to this disease.
Thank you for sharing those resources. I will make sure to include them in the listen notes. Michelle, what is your current health status now?
It
Thank you.
is an aggressive cancer, but it is very curable. And like any cancer, it's related to the presentation at diagnosis, right? So, how far the disease has gone. But that being said, you know, I was diagnosed at a stage three. And what my oncologist informed me was it's really no longer how you present. Right? It's no longer really about how you show up at diagnosis, like your stage of diagnosis, what's most important and what people really have to understand is how you respond to the treatment. Because so many people can hear the diagnosis, hear the stage, and say, that's it. I'm done. I'm gonna go live my life. I'm not getting chemo. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. No, baby. You got to hang in there before the, you got to hang in there till the miracle happens. And the miracle is often getting the treatment that is needed and then seeing how you respond to that.
That's so true, Michelle. And another thing that I've learned, even in my own experience, is that how one's health is prior to the diagnosis and treatment, that makes a big difference too, how healthy the person was before. Because
Yes.
my oncologist told me, he said, had you not been working out and eating well and all those things, you probably wouldn't have handled it as well as you did. And, of course, age factors into that also, but your health before is very important also.
Yes, that's why we can't wait for a diagnosis to get ourselves together, right? We
Right.
have to start right here, right now, today, whatever day it is. When you become aware, that's when you have to start. When you become aware that you can be living a more healthy life, because one of the things that contributes to that 40% higher mortality rate, particularly in African American women, is the fact that we often have other comorbidities or we have other diseases. So if you have diabetes or a kidney disease, and then you get diagnosed with a cancer, you're really battling multiple diseases at that point. And being able to manage the side effects of the different treatments, you're already kind of at a slight disadvantage because you're battling so many things. This is exactly what happened to our community when COVID hit, right? Because so many of us were already, diagnosed with things like asthma and diabetes and high blood pressure and kidney disease, that another diagnosis on top of it could really be problematic. And I just realized I didn't quite answer the question about my health. I am in excellent health. I had, as a result of the treatments, I had what we call a complete pathologic recovery. And what that means is that, so I first started with chemo. So I had what we call neoadjuvant chemotherapy. That means we're going to treat you with the chemo first to shrink the disease. My tumor was about 4.3 centimeters, so it was pretty big. And so I had the chemo to shrink the disease. By the time I completed my chemo regimen, you could not feel the lump. The lump was no longer palpable, was no longer visible on imaging. So that's what they call a complete pathologic recovery. The chemo did what it was supposed to do. I still had to have surgery. So I still followed with surgery. I had a lumpectomy. I did not do a mastectomy because at that point, there was nothing about removing my entire breast that was going to improve my prognosis. So I got that information, and the doctor said, hey, if you want a mastectomy, if it makes you sleep better at night, like we get it, right? And we're willing to do that. However, just know that that's going to open you up to a whole nother course in terms of healing and those sorts of things. So I still had to have surgery. I did a lumpectomy. And then I kind of wanted to get something out of this because that's also important to me that we got to think about, can I get something out of this? So I also did a breast reduction at the same time. And I was able to have that as part of my treatment. And not really part of the treatment, but to reduce the size of my breasts. And so I did a breast reduction. And then I also still had to go through the radiation treatment because there could have been microscopic disease. So that's cells that we can't see, won't show up on an imaging study, could be just one or two little baby cells hanging out. I had to have irradiation of my entire breast chest wall, as well as my supraclav, the portion of my clavicle above where the lymph nodes drain. I had to have radiation there as well to take care of any microscopic disease. But girl, I am cancer free.
Yay! I am so happy for you, Michelle.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is
Thank
a
you.
blessing. And you know, your body did what it was supposed to do as well. So,
Yes.
yes, you got to
Yes.
thank your body, boy, for hanging in there.
Yes.
Yes.
I am very grateful for the support that I received. I'm very grateful for the treatment that I received, the staff, the oncology team. There was so much that went into that because it was actually during COVID. So when I actually started my chemo regimen, it was January 11th of 2020.
Oh.
And like two chemo appointments in is
Yes.
when COVID hit. And I couldn't have anyone with me. I had to go to treatments alone. I had to sit in my car. I had to wait to be called in. No one else was there. Like it felt like a ghost town. So I'm so grateful for the support that I got during that time.
Good for you. That's a blessing. I know it had to be even harder during that time just because of the extra layer of isolation and all of those
Yes.
things. I
People couldn't
navigate
come
that.
over. I wanted to have company. Here I was still grieving my
Yeah.
husband's loss, but I had to be very careful about people that came into my home. I had to be extra, diligent about hand washing and exposure because at the time of the treatments actually depress your immune system. And so therefore I wouldn't be able to battle COVID, and there was no vaccine at that time or anything like that. So, I had to be extremely careful, but thank goodness for things like Zoom and FaceTime and those things that allowed me to stay in contact with people.
Wonderful. How has cancer changed you, Michelle, if it has at all?
Oh boy, it has changed me for sure. The first thing I did was I took the S off my chest. I couldn't be Miss Fix It anymore. And I didn't want to be Miss Fix It anymore. I am a firm believer that in addition to all the other risk factors, high levels of stress creates inflammation in our bodies. Trauma creates inflammation in our bodies. So all those types of processes, I had to distance myself from negative people. I had to curate what was coming into my head, so I don't watch news 24/7. I don't have the news programs and on in the background and things like that because those things create agitation and stress. And so that's one of the things that definitely changed for me. I lost about, from the time my husband passed away till now, I've lost probably over 50 pounds. Knowing that the risk factors associated with reoccurrence and obesity, I put the Chardonnay down. I stopped drinking. I no longer
Yeah.
drink. I'm almost 3 years sober.
Good.
And so those are some of the big things that change for me. And I also incorporate more movement. So I climb more stairs. I walk more. I relocated to New York. And that just gives me more natural movement because I don't depend on a car anymore.
Okay, good for you. What is the best advice for loved ones and friends to support someone diagnosed with cancer?
Yeah, I think allowing people to talk about it, encouraging talking about it, because I think for me, it can be uncomfortable to discuss it with people that have a negative outlook or they grimace just at the, because I remember looking at people and they just had that look of, oh, you poor baby, and it was so like, and I didn't want them to be in a tough spot trying to support me. So I found myself not being as forthcoming with people who I thought couldn't handle it. So here you think, I have a diagnosis and I'm still trying to take care of the people who's supposed to be taken care of and listening to me, right? So I think encouraging people to talk about it, being that ear, being there to just do. Oftentimes people will say, well, what can I do? But just do. Just do. Because we often don't know what we need. And it's difficult to communicate what we need. So I think, if you have an idea, just go ahead and do it. You can ask permission. Hey, baby, I want to bring you a tray of food. I'm going to come over and I would like to come over and sit with you. Like, just say, don't necessarily ask what could be done. Just ask permission to do what it is you're planning to do.
Great advice. I love that. You're right. When you're going through cancer, you have so much going on. You don't know what you really need at the time. There's so many other things that you're focused on that you're thinking about. Yes, just do. I love
Yeah.
that.
And the other thing about me is that I was a person who fixed everything else for everyone, right? So I was the problem solver, the fixer, And I think what is important is that you allow people to do for you. And if you know someone that's been diagnosed with cancer and they are one of those fixers, it's more important for you to go right in and just say, hey, I'm here to help you. I want to support you. Because it's easy for us, those folks that, have the S on their chest and are the ongoing fixers, to not ask for help. We haven't been accustomed to it, So I strongly encourage people that if that's someone that that has that MO of fixing everybody else, you got to work extra hard to kind of, I guess it's kind of like, what do you call that? Hand wrestling with them to
Oh,
let go
arm
of that.
wrestling.
Yeah, arm
Yes.
wrestling. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's not
Yeah.
natural for us.
That's right. I get it. I understand what you're saying. Let's switch gears a little bit, Michelle. About a
Yeah.
year ago, you participated in a clinical trial. Why did you decide to participate, and what has your experience been like?
Yes, great question. So I decided to participate in a clinical trial. There wasn't anything that was made available to me during the time of my treatment. So my treatment was standard of care. But after I completed the treatment, I was kind of like, well, what can I do to help? What can I do to help other women with a breast cancer diagnosis, future women that might receive a breast cancer diagnosis? And I was particularly challenged by the fact that a lot of African Americans don't participate in clinical trials. And I wanted to do something for my people as well.
Yeah, I understand that. It's tough. What advice do you have for Black or African American people who they're afraid, they're unsure, they're on the fence, they're totally against it? What advice do you
Yes.
have?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. To just do it, to participate. Because here's the thing that's happening now. Like, I totally understand the history around experimentation, and we didn't have informed consent. Oftentimes, we weren't consented at all about procedures about our bodies. But those times have changed. And what has happened now, the way cancer and a lot of illnesses are being treated, it's through precision medicine, which means treatments are being designed specifically for how your body responds. And the doctors don't know how we respond because we don't participate in the trials. So it's not a wide enough sample to know that this particular drug would be helpful for an African American diagnosed with cancer. Would our body respond differently? Would we have a different side effect to this particular treatment? So it is very important that we get involved. And a good example would be, I think about 50 years ago, when heart failure, heart treatments were totally based on white males because that's who was participating in the trials. Now, 50 years later, women have participated in those trials. And now we have good information about what works for men and what works for women. we got to break that down even further and understand that we respond differently. There's certain things about our makeup. There's certain things like triple negative breast cancer, you know, that is a cancer that specifically is diagnosed in younger African American women. So if we want to get to eradicating the disease or coming up with better treatments, we have to participate in the trials. So my suggestion is, I said to just do it, but to be informed, right? Get your questions answered. If you don't understand what's being offered, then, you know, keep asking questions until you feel comfortable. But it's very important that we participate.
Thank you, Michelle. How did you find out about the clinical trial that you're participating in? Because I think that's the other piece is awareness of what's out there.
Yes. So I would say that there's a problem with us, you know, with African Americans in general being open to participating, but there's also a problem with clinicians and researchers and their approach in asking us. So it's almost as if we've reached this impasse. They don't want to ask because we won't participate, right? So it's,
Exactly.
and they don't know what ways to ask. And sometimes having those conversations can be very difficult for them. And so I think, again, it's about asking. And so I went to my oncologist and I said, "Hey, is there anything I can do to help?" You know, and they said, "Oh, by the way, there is a trial, you know, out of University of Washington, and they want to develop a triple negative breast cancer vaccine." And I was like, "Really?" So I did a little back work on it, you know, research on it. They had given me websites and information to follow up. And when I got comfortable with what was being presented, I just went right in and said, "Yes, I want to be a part of it."
Wonderful. How has your experience been, Michelle? Has it been pretty positive so far?
It has been very positive. It's been a year.
Okay.
And next month, I have my final appointment around this particular clinical trial. So I signed up. I did all of the everything that they required that I do, I did, because if you stray away and you start like you don't show up for your appointment or you don't get the blood work, then those results cannot be captured by the lead investigators of the trial. So you have to go the distance. Right. So I participated in all my appointments and everything. And so it's been a year. I haven't had any side effects or anything. And it's just been a great overall experience to contribute to the body of knowledge that is going to help future generations diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer.
I love that, Michelle. And thank you so much for doing that because that could be helping me. It could be helping someone I love, you know, can be helping all of us, really. So thank you so much for doing that.
Yes, it's about the future generations. And so,
Yes.
for anyone that's been diagnosed, I think with all of this, the burden of cancer, we can also look at the promise of this has happened to me. What can I do to help? It's not just one way, right? So, what can I do to help others, help my family members? So, being open to the genetic testing, you know, I signed up for the genetic testing. So, you know, we were able to determine whether I was positive for BRCA1 and BRCA2. And without having that information, I can't share information with my sisters and with my, if I had daughters, about the genetic makeup of this particular disease. So there's lots of opportunity to, once diagnosed, to also be of service, to be of help.
A lot of great information. And you touched on this a little bit, you know, getting in the habit of when you get that diagnosis, ask about the clinical trial also. Don't wait to see if the standard of care is going to work or not. Ask about that clinical trial if anything's available as well. So,
Yes, particularly if you present at a late stage. So, I think late stage disease can be tricky because there could be standards of care that the odds for you are not as great in terms of survival. But there could be a great clinical trial, a great drug that they're trying to get approved that may actually save your life. May actually save your life. It's just that it's not a standard of care yet, right? So don't you want to be one of the first people to benefit, particularly if there's no other treatment for you that's available?
It's not always about a last resort.
Yes, that's right.
I think that's important. Thank you so much. That's a lot of great information. Now, Michelle, let's switch over to some of the wonderful work that you're doing as a coach, a speaker, and consultant. What are some of the exciting new things on the horizon for you?
Yeah, so I left corporate about a year ago because this diagnosis, the loss of my husband, all of those things have kind of changed my outlook about life. And like, I want to have impact and I want to have purpose and I want to serve. So I left corporate and I have a professional speaking business as well as a coaching business. And one of the things that I'm speaking about is resilience, because it's not just about surviving something. It's about thriving even after, right? So being able to share a message of hope around thriving. Because I find that while many women, not just African American women in general, we're all very strong and we're leading our households and we're trying to make it all happen. We want to be all that at work and we want to be all that at home and we want to be the best mama and the best wife and the best auntie. But guess what? You can't do any of that if you're not taking care of yourself. And part of being resilient is about being aware of your risk, being aware of the screening that has to be done. So I'm trying to promote a message around resilience that's not just about being strong, right? Just about getting through something. How can we mitigate these diseases? How can we, be diagnosed early? How can we avoid a diagnosis? That to me is a message around resilience. And I want women to know that it's great to want to take care of your family. It's great to want to be there for everyone else. But when you don't take care of your own health, you are doing a disservice to yourself as well as future family lines. There's a legacy that will be cut off should you not make it. There is a financial impact that if you are diagnosed, whether it's diagnosed and treated and survive the disease, or whether you succumb to the disease, there is a financial impact of that to your family. So just trying to help women see the big picture and why it's important to get screened, take care of our health, and to communicate with our family members about the diagnosis, and we don't do our family members any justice by keeping things away from them, keeping secrets. So that's my message, and that's what I spend a lot of time doing. And I'm also desperately trying to impact that 40% higher mortality rate for women of color.
Wonderful work and very powerful words. If people are interested, Michelle, in working with you for coaching, speaking, where can they find you?
Yes, come visit me on LinkedIn. That's where you can find me. And soon I will be launching a new website and some very specific programs, particularly one called Black Don't Crack, because we say that all the time about, about the outside, but the truth is we are cracking on the inside. And so we need more work around our health and more work around our physical health and our mental health.
Wonderful. Thank you, Michelle. And finally, if you're comfortable, what advice do you have for spouses who have lost their husband or wives to suicide? Do you have any
Yes.
advice to share?
Absolutely. You know, this it's never it's not a place where I thought I would ever find myself. And it's part of a club that no one wants to be in, right? But what I can tell you is that there's life after, and I am slowly rebuilding my life. And I would say that nothing happens in a vacuum. Nothing is all good and nothing is all bad. I would love for my husband to still be here with me, but I would be remiss if I dismissed all the things that have happened as a result, the relationships that I've built, the things that I've learned about myself, the things that I've learned about my support network. And so I just encourage people to, even in the face of adversity and extreme challenge, find joy, find gratitude, because it is there. And those things alone, that mindfulness about being joyful, the mindfulness about gratitude, can help alleviate that anxiety and that stress that can build up in us and make us susceptible to a cancer. I truly believe that part of my cancer diagnosis was not just a result of being overweight, not just a result of not having children, not just a result of leaning very heavily into the Chardonnay, but also a result of unprocessed trauma and grief. And so I strongly encourage women to get help in that regard. If you've lost someone, it's not business as usual. It's not business as usual. That is a traumatic experience. And post-traumatic stress is a real thing. Even if we want to still move through the world and feel like we're okay, we're not. Go get help.
Great advice. That's a great way to wrap up. Anything else, Michelle, that you would like to share?
Well, I just want to say thank you to you for having, thank you, Talia, for having just this wonderful podcast and making this your mission, you know, after a diagnosis. It's all about, yes, we have to take care of ourselves, but when we're whole again and we're ready, pick up the mantle to be of service. And that is exactly what you're doing here today. And I just thank you for that. And I thank you for inviting me, and keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. That means so much. It is my pleasure, and I'm blessed to be able to meet a lot of amazing people like you, Michelle. I admire you so much in your work, your resilience, your knowledge and wisdom, and I want to thank you for all the gems that you shared with us today. I wish you nothing but the best in the future.
Thank you so much. Great to be here. Thank you to your audience.
Thank you. I would like to give a shout out to the listeners. Thank you for joining us. Please share, follow, or subscribe so that you can easily find this podcast and listen again. You can listen to Navigating Cancer Together on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcast. Are you looking to expand your professional network? If you are, please join me on LinkedIn. As an active member of the platform, I would like to personally invite you to connect with me. Let's grow our connections together. Search for Talaya Dindi, that is TALAYADENDY, BCPA. That is it for this Wednesday. And until next time, let's keep navigating cancer together. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Navigating Cancer Together. I hope you found it helpful. Please be sure to subscribe, share, and tell your friends and family about it. For notes from the show and previous episodes, visit ontheotherside.life and check out the podcast section. I would love it if you join me for the next episode. Talk to you soon.